Hello, and welcome to the Development Debrief with Catherine Van Sickle, the stories-based podcast that interviews professionals, donors, and thought leaders in the field of fundraising. Hello, listeners. Welcome to a very special episode. Mother's Day encourages us to honor motherhood. Whether your mother is with you in person, virtually, or in your heart, we are all marked by our mothers in some way. This conversation helps me realize our mothers don't only help us grow. We push them to grow and better themselves, too. Our guest for this episode talks about her experience of being a mother as a grateful patient, as well as juggling a powerful career with parenthood. Leslie shares the inspiration she feels from her children to do good in people's lives through her development career. Leslie is passionate about her work, and she exudes joy as she shares her story with us. Leslie H. Nelson Bernier has served as president of the UNC Health Foundation and associate dean for development of the UNC School of Medicine since January of 2018. In her dual leadership roles, Leslie oversees a dynamic team of nearly 60 development professionals who raise critical statewide support for research, education, and patient care across North Carolina. Leslie joined the UNC Health Foundation in 2005 and has built a standout reputation as a high-achieving leader. Prior to her service at the UNC Health Foundation, Leslie spent a decade in corporate sales and event management in the hotel industry. She began her fundraising career as Associate Director of Development for the University of Virginia School of Architecture. Leslie was born in Texas, but grew up in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. She has a bachelor's degree in psychology from Clemson University. Let's get started. Leslie, welcome.
Hi, Catherine. Thank you so much for having me.
Why don't we start, in honor of Mother's Day, with your personal story and how it relates to Grateful Patient fundraising?
My passion for Grateful Patient fundraising really grew out of a personal experience that I had with my first son. Very first pregnancy, completely normal, completely healthy. And unfortunately, at the very beginning of my 28th week, I went into premature labor. And my physicians did everything they could to stop that labor. But 2 days later, my son Carter was born. He was so tiny, so 3 pounds, and he was very, very sick, could not breathe on his own. To put his size in perspective for you, he fit into the palm of his dad's hand. He could put his dad's wedding ring around his wrist. But he spent 6 really long weeks at the Newborn Critical Care Center here at UNC Children's Hospital, where we had an opportunity to interact with some incredible physicians and nurses and staff. I was already in development at UNC Health at the time, but I got to experience everything that I pitched to our donors, every single thing I said that made us special, that made UNC different and unique, our multidisciplinary care, the collaborative way that we approach our care, the patient and family-centered care that we offer. I got to experience all of that firsthand. And for me, it was really a turning point in my development career because I thought, aha, I get it now. I completely understand. I was very connected to our mission before, but that personal experience only enhanced my commitment to UNC and certainly to children's health writ large.
What an incredible story. I mean, to your point, you experienced all the things that you talk about, but you also experienced the pain. Yes. And the fear.
For sure. I tell new NICU moms and dads, I get to talk to a lot of them. I tell them that you're joining a very special club. It's a club you never want to be a part of, but we totally understand where you're coming from. You know, leaving the hospital without your baby is probably the most heartbreaking experience you can ever have. You know, I've been really fortunate that I've been able to walk alongside some other parents in this journey. And it is a real, it's turned out to be a real gift. And my son is 13 years old now and doing really, really well.
What's Carter up to these days?
Carter is a typical 13-year-old boy. He's just he's an amazing kid. Very into his schoolwork, very into sports. But Carter has adopted one thing that I hold near and dear, and that's a heart for service. He's my kid who is already giving back and doing things in the community that I would have never even envisioned him wanting to do. So I'm really, really proud of him. And he's just got the greatest sense of humor. So he's a great kid.
We all need some humor right now.
So. Oh, yes. Yes. He provides it.
On some of my other episodes, I've acknowledged guests being parents. Particularly, I can think of Chase Palmer and Ryan Davis, who both have multiple kids. I have been really impressed by balancing these great development careers and having these families. We haven't really talked that much about this subject. I'm actually really curious and interested to talk about that, about how you balance motherhood with your professional responsibilities and how that does actually impact having a serious professional development career.
Catherine, in my opinion, it's a myth that you can achieve balance in your personal and professional life.
That's what I thought.
I think we do women a great disservice by saying that you can have it all, that you can have this balanced approach. There's no one right way to do any of this. And I can tell you through my experience and certainly what the data tells us, our human brains are not meant to multitask successfully. And so rather than focus on balance, I have really purposefully chosen to focus on being present. So my presence is how I try to come to balance in this world of professional and personal responsibilities. So no matter what the situation is, I focus on being 100% there. When I'm at home, I'm 100% at home. When I'm at work, I'm 100% at work. Not to say that there's not bleed over occasionally. I'm not perfect. Try bringing 100% of yourself to an interaction with a family member or a coworker and see how different it is. Sit down with your child to work on their homework without your phone sitting right beside you where you're looking through email and trying to do work stuff and trying to do math and helping and, you know, doing all this. You'd be so surprised that the intention in which you make yourself wholly there, how different the outcome is. And so I don't balance it. I'm home. I do the things that I need to do there. I'm a wife and a mother first. I make no excuses about that. And it's a non-negotiable for me. And certainly my wonderful leaders know that and value the same thing. But presence is a whole lot more important.
Just to give us a sense, what are the ages of your kids?
10, 13, 21, and 25.
Oh my gosh.
Very, very full life.
That's incredible. How do you and your husband, I don't want to use the word balance again, but share the responsibilities with two careers and four kids?
That's a great question. And I think, you know, for starters, for us, we place a very high value on communication. We talk extensively about our schedules, our children's needs, our needs as a couple, and we check in with each other in the morning and in the evening religiously. No matter where we are, if we're on the road, we still check in the morning and the evenings to just make sure that we're on the same page. We do a ton of calendar planning on Sunday nights just to make sure we've got the week mapped out and we know who needs to do what. But we're also committed to speaking up and asking for help when we need it. I think very often as parents, we tend to just say, no, we can get, we got it. We've got all these balls juggling in the air. But the reality is that being able to speak up and say, hey, listen, just so you know, I have a very large donor meeting today that I need to be 100% for. Can you take this instead? Speak up and ask for what you need and you get it. You absolutely get it. Balls still get dropped in our house quite a lot. We are human and we make a ton of mistakes, but we try to really value communication with each other.
Yeah. Do you find that your kids inspire you to go further in your career, or do you find that in a way you want to pull back?
They inspire me to go forward. I want our children to know their mom and their dad have been very productive, contributing members of society. And in my case, I want my kids to know through my work, I've been able to help those that need it most at our hospital. So it does inspire me to do more. You know, they certainly complain at times when, you know, we've got something going on with donors or meetings or what have you. Just this week, Carter's teachers reached out to me and said, you know, he's doing great with all this online learning. That's terrific. But I also wanted to let you know how proud he is of the work that you're doing, because he talks a lot about the money that you all are raising for the hospital. And I thought, wow, okay. That just makes it all worth it, you know? So I'd say it definitely inspires me to want to do more. I want to do as much as I possibly can to make a difference in this world. Isn't that what we're here for? To make life easier for those around us.
Yeah.
Certainly for those who suffer the most.
Yeah. And I'm not a parent, but I know I've heard a lot of people say that so much of parenting is modeling the values that you're teaching. And, you know, with you mentioning that Carter is into service and wants to help others, there's no doubt he's drawn that Dev Life connection from watching you and finding his own version of that.
Absolutely. And he's really, really into our homeless shelter here in Chapel Hill, which is not something that I've necessarily, I mean, my passion is children's healthcare, but he's found his own way. And I love that. Like, let him just explore the things that he's interested in. And it's been amazing to see what that's been like.
You have had some incredible growth over the past 13 years, specifically moving up and up into more senior positions, into higher levels of leadership. How did you navigate those career transitions?
I am so fortunate to have had some amazing opportunities here at UNC. And I'd say, you know, probably what's helped me the most as I've navigated this is being open-minded to the journey. Plan your career path as much as you want, but it doesn't always happen in the way that you think it's going to. It's hardly ever a linear path. And so if you're open-minded to the twisty, windy road and what might be possible, you're going to end up being so surprised at the good that can come from that. You know, I had in my mind what I thought my path might look like, and it is so different. But I think the second I said, all right, I'll be open to this and see what happens. But that said, you also have to be very brave and very bold. You can't stand by and wait for things to happen to you. That's one of the core pieces of advice I give for young development professionals that are coming up behind us. Don't wait for somebody to tell you you're a good leader. Go be a good leader. I have tried really hard to speak up and ask for what I wanted. It hasn't always happened exactly the way I would have wanted, but it's happened. When you speak up and you lean in and you say, hey, listen, this is something I'd really like to explore, you'd be so surprised by the answers. When I was leading our children's team, I thought I was going to be in that job forever. I thought this is... And I had tried twice. So once as a major gift officer in children's, that didn't work out. And what a blessing. It didn't work out. I was devastated. I thought there couldn't be a more perfect job for me than working at the children's hospital or raising money on behalf of children's health. And I didn't get that job. But I got the job as director, leading that team 3 years later. So that's what I mean about being open to the journey. And I thought I would have been in that children's role forever. And when this opportunity came up to be considered for the president of the UNC Health Foundation, it took a lot of hard thinking about that. But I'm really, really glad that I leaned in and said, okay, let me think about that some.
12 years ago, what did you think you were going to be doing? Was it still being on the children's team or...
For sure. The children's job was just, you know, and I still raise a lot of money for children's healthcare. So, you know, I haven't had to step away from that, but I just thought, this is it. This is exactly what I want to be doing. And now sitting 2.5 years into my role as president, I think, wow, I wish I'd opened my lens a little bit bigger when I was at children's, because you just never know what might be possible. I have learned so much in this role. I'm grateful for the opportunity to serve all of our areas across UNC Health now.
No one can see this because they're listening, but Leslie is smiling so widely. Just the minute she talks about the children's, but even your current role, you know, I think when you love something so much, it's inevitably going to lead to positive things.
Absolutely.
And that just sounds like that's been your experience.
It has. And you know, it's been very fascinating to me how every stop along the way at UNC, it's really hard not to get excited about the things that are happening here. You know, I care deeply about children's healthcare and about UNC Health, but I feel equally as passionate about what's happening at Carolina Performing Arts or our business school. You know, as you look across this great institution, there are pockets of just amazing work happening everywhere. And so that's how I know I'm in the right spot.
Yes. Someday, would you consider trying a different type of fundraising like arts or higher ed?
The short answer is yes. I mean, I think higher education is such a special thing. It is absolutely a vital part of this community, certainly of our country. And I think public institutions in particular, you know, providing access to a great education is one of the vital, vital roles of a public university. I'd say absolutely. I would definitely be interested in something like that. Candidly, the opportunity to serve at any point in time at my alma mater, if they were to ever come calling, I went to Clemson University. And so Clemson is near and dear to my heart. And I would absolutely consider an opportunity to serve there.
That's amazing. I don't know the Southern landscape nearly as well as I should. And I know there are a lot of great institutions in your
home. Gosh, yes. Well, so in North Carolina, I mean, again, I'm really, really biased, Catherine, but in North Carolina, we're so lucky just in our area to have UNC Chapel Hill, Duke, NC State, Wake Forest. I mean, we just have this incredible system across North Carolina of higher education. And so I think you're right. There's a lot of great schools around.
I would love to learn a little bit more now about Grateful Patient Fundraising, which you are clearly so passionate about. How do you think your personal motivation for the work has impacted donors when you work with them? Do you tell them about your story? How personal do you get?
Yeah. Let me start kind of with the first part and say, I don't really see my work at all as a job. I feel very, very fortunate that my personal passion and my professional abilities are very, very tightly aligned. This work is very, very meaningful to me. Walking alongside patients and families at some of their most vulnerable times is just such a gratifying experience. And seeing them be able to take what could be a really great outcome, it could be a really bad outcome, but to see them step up and want to make a difference for those coming behind them is just incredibly inspiring. I'm highly motivated to do this work on my own because of my personal commitment to UNC. And I think that part resonates with our donors. You know, our job as development professionals is to listen. So I don't often share my story. Parts of my story come out as we're talking about things that are important to me and the things that I value, but I don't tend to share my full story. That said, if I think my story might help us close a gift to help our newborn critical care center, then you bet I will absolutely share it. But I do a whole lot more listening than I do talking about my experience.
Yeah, and I guess that sort of matches with the experiences that I've had and others have had that I work with, where you share as you're asked and you share as it comes up in relation to the donor.
Right. And so often, you know, it's not really relevant. You know, my story is my story, and I really want to hear what their story is and what kind of impact they want to have. That's a much better way to tackle the conversation with our donors.
Yeah. One of the myths is, because it's such an intimate experience where you are with people at such difficult times, that you share so much more, but it sounds like that might not maybe be the case.
No, you really don't. I mean, I think it's when you pull out your very empathetic, thoughtful, respectful way of dealing with, you know, anybody who would be in a situation like that. It's amazing how these experiences can in turn drive you to do something different, to drive you to want to make a difference, to want to make a contribution to research that's going to prevent something like what's happened to you. It amazes me, Catherine, the donors that we work with that have, you know, obviously they're grateful for good outcomes, but equally important are the donors that we work with that have bad outcomes, that lose a family member that you'd think, oh, you know, your initial thought might be, well, I can't call them. I don't want to work with them because they just lost somebody. And in reality, some of the deepest relationships that I have with some donors have been because of a loss. That's a really keen thing to think about too, just as you're doing this grateful patient work. It is incredibly gratifying.
Can it be hard to not take on some of that weight and some of that suffering?
I think for sure. You know, we hear, you know, people, again, back to the listening part, we get the opportunity to hear a lot. And oftentimes it's in a hospital setting. You know, we certainly aren't going to visit patients and asking them for gifts, but we get, you know, they invite us into these conversations as they're sitting in a chemo chair, getting their chemotherapy. And it can be very taxing. And I think one of the things that's really important in our work is to make sure that you've got somebody to talk to about this. You can come back and debrief from a donor visit, sit down and say, gosh, you know, they just lost their 4-year-old son to leukemia. And I just want to talk about that a little bit. And so I think because we all are in this same health space together, our experiences are very similar and we can lean on one another for support.
Who is that person for you?
The person for me is one of my mentors. I'm very fortunate to have two. You don't often look to an anesthesiologist to be your mentor, but I will say I got really, really lucky. And I have a mentor who is an anesthesiologist by training, but certainly an administrative leader here at UNC Health. Mm. And he is the person that I talk to about everything. He's the one confidant that I can say anything I want to say, like this really stinks about this situation with this poor patient, or he's a physician, so he gets it and he understands it. I found a mentor in an interesting spot, but I will say he's taught me so much about being able to deal with stuff like this.
That's so great. And nice that it's at the same institution.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about your team and the dean that you work with.
Oh gosh, Catherine, I am so fortunate on both fronts. First, my dean and CEO is someone that I've worked with for a really long time. He's a visionary leader. He's my second mentor. He pushes me so hard to be better, to do better, to do more, but he does it all cheerleading beside me, cheering me on every step of the way. He's amazing, truly amazing. This is a man who not only is the dean and CEO for our institution, but he's also a researcher and a physician. His expertise is in peanut allergy, and he's just, he sees patients still and does research, and he's just an amazing man. But I'm also really fortunate to have an incredible team. Again, I'm really biased, but I think I've got the greatest team in the world. We're all very mission-driven. We all have a story to share. So I've told you mine, but we all have a reason why we're here. We hire for mission and values, and we ask that you have a very strong sense of your why from the first time we meet you in an interview setting. So for me, it's not good enough to just say that you want to come to work at UNC Chapel Hill. I've got to hear your why. And that's really, really important to this group.
Great.
Yeah.
Can you think of an example of how you're pushed while being encouraged or led?
My dean and CEO very much values leadership and asked me when I first took this job to please find a way to prioritize gaining experience in leadership. Practical, hands-on, not fundraising experience. Certainly that's have avenues for that, building my leadership skills. And as we were talking about earlier with Advancement Leadership Lab, that gave me the perfect platform to be able to work on those leadership skills. And at first, a year-long commitment, it's a lot. I'm brand new in this job, but he was right there with me saying, you've got to do this. This is what I'm talking about. This is what is going to make the difference. And he was right. He was absolutely right.
Yeah. And to your point with the year commitment, that's certainly not, checking a box. That's really investing in yourself and taking on hours of work.
Right. And I think, I've certainly described Advancement Leadership Lab as being transformative, very transformative to me, both personally and professionally. And, I think one of the things that I took away from that entire experience, and Dr. Burks, our dean and CEO, certainly talks about this a lot, is a self-awareness and being able to really take it all in and know that you can constantly be improving and not just being satisfied with where we are right now. So he can push me and I say, yes, you're right. It may take me a little longer to get there than him, but he's generally right.
So for those of you who don't know, Advancement Leadership Lab is the public version of LIA Leadership in Action, which I discuss on another episode with Fritz Schrader at Johns Hopkins University. It's funny because in that episode, we talk more specifically about leadership training, but he mentions self-awareness as one of the most important traits of a leader.
Hard skill to develop, but a really important one.
How do you prioritize the management alongside the grateful patient work?
I'd say first and foremost, I am highly energized by my one-on-one work with donors. It's the thing.
So you have a portfolio.
I do have a portfolio.
Okay.
It is. It's small, but it's mighty. I highly, highly, highly value that work. It is what provides me the energy to really go through the rest of the day. And so For a long time, my mantra has really been to make the first three things that I do during each day to be donor related. So if it's, you know, donor meetings, if it's phone calls, if it's Zoom meetings at this point in time, if it's writing proposals, if it's writing thank you notes, my first three things are always donor facing. And that way I really can ensure that not only am I getting the things done that I need to get done, but it also provides me the stamina for the rest of the day. So it's, I place a high, high value on those first three things that I do out of the gates. It is never like that every single day, every single week. That's what I strive for. It is definitely the thing that I like to start my day doing.
Yeah, it sounds like it really centers you.
It does. It absolutely does. And that way I know, I mean, I'm keeping those conversations and those interactions in the back of my mind for anything else that comes up through the rest of the day. Now, COVID threw all of that up into the air. So
I was going to say, yeah, what is the response been like for the hospital and just, you know, have been getting PPE donations and how have you stayed
sure.
for all of this?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I'd say for the first week, I was pretty shell-shocked. This is where we found ourselves, but very, very quickly, we, alongside my dean and CEO, started working on the philanthropic needs that we would have during this crisis. We're so fortunate that our donors have been really, really great to us. They've stepped up to help us obtain PPE. In fact, one of our donors helped us to, a connection of one of our donors helped us to get 5 million masks. So that's a really
wow.
big thing. But they've also recognized that they have their particular program of passion. You know, if they're a children's hospital supporter or a cancer supporter or a medical education supporter, it's not that we've asked them to stop doing that, but they've also said, hey, listen, I really want to help with your COVID response too. We have been very, very fortunate to have our donors, 603 of them, lean in and help with this COVID work.
Wow. So it's been an and instead of...
It really has been an and. I mean, I think there's probably a bit of a natural inclination to say, oh gosh, okay, we need to push pause on our fundraising. And certainly we pushed pause on a little bit of our fundraising for program specific areas, but it was only for a few weeks and we're right back at it. So it's definitely an and. And I'll tell you, one of the greatest gifts of this crisis is that the fundraising is so different, right? We're raising money for really different things right now. Some similar things, but some different. And as a result, I have gotten to work with coworkers that I would never have had an opportunity to work with otherwise. And as an example, I have worked very closely and extensively with our supply chain team. Who knew? They are amazing. My new just best friends, I just think they are terrific. So I've told them when this is all over, we're going to have to do some kind of socially distant appropriate party to celebrate their work because they're just amazing.
Oh, that's fantastic. How have you encouraged your team through all of this? I mean, it sounds like there have been some real live examples of positivity and teamwork, but when people are just feeling lost and frustrated, what do you tell them? And what do you tell us?
Yeah. You know, I say, keep going, keep trying. What you do matters. What we do matters. I try to give people really practical application and examples of the way that the money that we are raising is helping. Just keep going, keep going. Speak up if you need help. Speak up if you're feeling scared or tired or frustrated. We don't have all of the answers. And the more that we can talk about it and communicate, I think the better off that we're going to be. We again, back to that placing a high value on communication. We will get through this. We absolutely will get through this and be better on the other side and better able to serve our patients and families on the other side.
Oh, well, this has been such a wonderful conversation. And I would love to end with my signature question, which is, what do you know for sure?
I just love this question, Catherine. And I will say, what I know for sure is that if you find your passion as early in your life as you can, and you chase it with all your energy, you will find success. In my view, it's just one of the keys to leading a very happy and fulfilled life. And I so enjoyed being with you. This was a great, great, great time for me too.
Thank you. Please share this episode with your mothers and other DevLife moms who need to hear it. You can connect with me and share other inspiring moms in the field on Instagram at DevDebrief or on our LinkedIn page. I would like to feature other powerhouse moms throughout the week on social media. Thanks and have a great day.